Could you talk about the number of pieces of wood that you have to sort of hunt?
Well, which one you want me to use? Actually, Langdon is my name, but Lanny is short for...
Whatever you like.
Oh, it doesn't make any difference, so...
I thought maybe you have many aliases.
I do, actually.
I call him Paul, like he ain't got yet. And so, what if I, just because Paul and Lanny, when we had kids, and somebody came to us and says, I want this name, Lanny, why is it Paul? The part was the alias, that was Chuck
Small. Or was that Dennis?
Oh,
would you just say your name and address there?
Lanny Jarvis. What's my address, wife?
HC78.
HC78.
Box
220. Box 220. Rock Cave, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Did that qualify? Should I do it again?
Can't get over there.
Okay. So could you talk a little bit about how long you've been making furniture and talk a little bit about how you started making furniture with your daughters?
Okay, well, we're talking about, we can go back to 70, 73, 74. And when my youngest or my oldest daughter got big enough to want a doll crib, that started the whole thing going. And went from there, of course, to doll cribs and doll chairs and all the little fixtures that kids need. And I moved from Virginia. This all started in Virginia. We lived in Louisa County, Virginia. We sold out our place there and came to West Virginia. And I'm still making this stuff for the neighborhood kids. And I decided to take some of it and go down to the Jackson's Mill show. What do they call that thing?
Jubilee.
The Jubilee, yeah. And I went down with some at the Jubilee, and this fella come over and says, I'll tell you what, if you'll make me an adult chair, I'll buy it from you. So that really got me off. And so I went home, and it was a long time after that before I made an adult chair, actually. That was in the middle of leaving, wasn't it, going to Mexico and for our winter trip and leaving that part of West Virginia. But then when it came back, I started up on it. And that started carrying us. We started making money off of it, and that started carrying us. And we started going to arts and crafts shows. And I just, I got just more and more interested in the challenge of making another chair, because of everything, it just seems that the wood would guide me, and I would always end up with something different without really having to design before I start, you might say, which I kind of enjoyed that. Just picking a certain wood, like ironwood here, and then letting it design itself, and that's a comfortable thing with me, rather than trying to sit and come up, because if I try to preconceive anything, any notions at all, it never works. I can't do it. It just won't work. It'll put such a strain on me to try to... But once I get one piece, either one of these, either anything, like, especially if it's a bit abstract, then I can go from there. But, and then I guess you could say I started getting attention, and of course, you know, that always helps keep you going. And then, as time went on, I was able to hook that award from out of Charleston and the biannual. And here we sit today, you might say. Just really, these chairs, you know, I do them because I like the wood. I do it because I like this. The shape of the wood. But a classic design like this that's not what moves me. What really gets me going, what really drives me out is to take the motion that chair has and to be able to take all that motion and all that and then balance it out and make a useful, functional piece of sculpture. Technically speaking, that's what I like to do, is make functional sculpture. I wouldn't want to make a sculpture that sit there and just for looks. I really enjoy the challenge of making it useful in the home and part of everyday life. Yeah. And so that kind of keeps me going from one chair to another. A new chair is what drives me. A new look to see what I can get that I haven't gotten before. Of course, you can't do two of these. There's no such thing as two of them. But I just love the idea of the one I haven't done. That one keeps me going.
Could you talk a little bit about how you collect your wood, what kinds of wood you like to work with, and if you have any kind of process for, like, do you have a general rule of thumb for how long you let wood age before you use it? If you could just talk about the nature of the wood that you use.
Well, now this piece of laurel right here, I've discovered that drying laurel and working with laurel is one of the easiest ones I've worked with, because the biggest fear, if you cut a piece of wood, especially if you cut it green, but regardless, when you cut that piece of wood and it becomes the one you want, the biggest fear you have after that is it checking, if you want it to or don't want it to. Now sometimes it's okay to have wood that checks. Sometimes you don't want your wood to check. And then I have to guard it and keep it in the shade and keep it out of the dry wind and also the idea that this motion that this piece of wood has is literally the thing that moved me. And when we moved into this area, I had been making more of this classic design, but when we moved into this area and all this rhododendron and laurel, that was the thing that really stirred me inside. Then I really got this inner desire going it's kind of hard to put in words, you know, being compelled to do something. You know, how do you put that into words? But because we're here in this great sea of laurel and rhododendron, I just have. It's like a treasure hunt to go out and be looking for the other piece you need. And it's actually the piece that starts you off is like a treasure hunt. It makes the whole chair. So I think of it as a treasure. Yeah. And no wood yet that I've worked with is more energetic than and moves me no more than the laurel and the rhododendron. And it's just this shape, that this challenge to, you know, it's like, to me, this is so pretty and just so beautiful. I want it around me. That's the thing that stirred me in the beginning, is I want it around me. And from there, it's nice to get to intention, you know, that's for sure. I like that. But it's like we were talking about earlier, is trying to market this is now, and that's where I draw a blank. I just like to sit and work and just, I enjoy finding out about what I'm doing. And don't want nobody to tell me, I want to find it out. And I'm still here with this. I don't know when I'll get away from laurel and rhododendron or anything that has a shape that, now that's sassafras right there. Kathy's chair is all sassafras. And there's a lot of motion in that wood. But it has its limitations when it comes, because it has a pattern it grows, and that pattern that you see there is that's sassafras. Getting outside that pattern would be awfully hard. But now this, I can keep making chairs until I'm left this planet that never looked the same because of this motion that forever changing. If just and as far as gathering goes and walking around, and it's I cover quite a distance around here. I'd say I got about a 12-mile radius that I walk in, and to find even when it gets down to the last couple of pieces in a chair like this Laurel chair, things get extremely difficult. And I really am walking and walking and walking. I walk a circle, try not to get lost, just for that one piece. And I'll have to gather. I would have to gather. Oh shucks. It isn't the same for all pieces, but for the arms, in this particular chair, I guess I got 10 or 12 pieces of just the one side of each piece I'll gather. Even a chair as simple as this one right here, I'll gather, oh shucks, 3 or 4 pieces of each one of these pieces to get the one I want exactly. Now some things are more simple than others, and if I get to leave the bark on, that makes it less work and less complicated in a certain sort of way, because when you try to take something down to a finish, you got to really get involved with scratches and when you clean wood. But yeah, I guess I'll gather, that chair over there has 12 pieces I'll gather to get to one. So I may have a 100 pieces of wood I've gathered and walked around and gathered to get that one. Now that does give me opportunity to gather to try up another chair of the same style. I go out and pick one of those pieces and I go out and find it, match it, because none of those out there will match now you see on the porch. None of those will match. I've tried every match you can. And it goes on like that. The chair, it's kind of hard to say, but the chair has as much to say about its design, and even more than I do. You see, I'm out to balance a piece, not necessarily to, I don't pick no piece. Once I start find my first piece, I don't pick anything from there. It picks the chair out. Now, let's see, what can we go on with?
So do you find like one piece of wood and then that's where you start? You say, okay, I found this one interesting piece of wood.
Yes.
You let that piece of wood lead you.
Yes, exactly. Now, not so in a chair like this. Now, this chair started with this thing that you yourself noticed. You like this, you know, the texture of that right there. Anytime you're working with a classic design, it's a lot easier than working with a free form design. It's so much easier. Of course it is. It's obvious. But this is what I want to do over here. You know, this is kind of like practice work. This is a sentimental piece. I was with my brother when he was on the lam, and he was down on the Suwannee River, and we went down to visit him, and I just made this because I was there, and just the need to do something all the time, you see. And but really what's inside of me to do is that work over there. And of course, you know, when you think about just purely interesting pieces of wood in themselves, this honeysuckle, a fork-shaped wood right here is also, you know, that really gets me, that stirs me up to create, well, or to put together, I should say, better said, something like this. Like I say, it's the form and it's the shape that draws me and drives me, keeps me looking for that inner interest in getting a piece I've never seen or I haven't done, rather, not never ever seen, but something I haven't ever done is what keeps me. I don't like repeating myself and doing the same piece of furniture again. I just couldn't even do it and have no heart in it and interest in it, other than somebody commissions me to do a piece of work. I don't care for it. we do it out of need. Yeah, because it runs into confusion every time. Every time. It's hard to please. I'd rather make the piece and sell it. I'd be surprised. Everybody likes their own ideas. See, the same thing drives me, drives everybody else. Yeah. And they want a design, right? But that's, you know, we do it. And I enjoy doing it. I like to be proud of what I do, for sure. And I will add to that and say that I love being in the woods. I love being there. I never get tired of that. And to me, there's always something interesting and always something new to be done with wood. And you don't ever have to repeat yourself. And that really keeps me alive, and my interest is still right there, because I can always go out and make that new piece.
When you moved here, did you realize that you were going to be surrounded by rhododendron and laurel?
No, not in the very beginning of moving here. No.
Manny, can you start by saying when I moved here?
Thank you. Sorry, Jerry.
Run it by me.
When I moved here?
Just start with that, so you're not answering the question.
Yeah.
When I moved here, no. When I moved here, I was drawn in by the boulders and the hemlocks and the rhododendron. And we lived in Lewis County, which has none of this vegetation, hardly any of it, I should say. And when we came over here, looking for property to buy. And that's when I saw the rhododendron and the laurel, because I'd already been fooling with furniture and trying to make stuff, you see. But it was then, when I saw this, that you can say that I was challenged from inside, and that need to have it around me, that want to have it around me and be a part of it. That's exactly how that went. And then when we got over here, of course, immediately I didn't even get up here. I was at the bottom of the hill in this place we were leasing and that's where I made the chair we have in the governor's mansion down there. Just moved by that. The first chair I ever made was this chair. This is the first adult chair. Am I right in saying that? Yeah, this was the first adult chair that I made. And then the third chair is the chair that we won the award with. My mother has the second chair. It's the same as this one, only has arms. She has this one, actually belongs to my youngest daughter. And the oldest daughter has the chair that is in the governor's mansion. That belongs to her. He just thinks that belongs to him. That's true. And so now when we came here is when I really got involved with laurel and rhododendron. And felt really fortunate to live in a whole sea of it. Oh boy, I felt Brer Rabbit in the briar patch, you know. Right at home. So where should we go from there now?
Jerry, do you have any?
Well, talking about cleaning and how monotonous it can get, but you can't lose your focus. If you lose your focus, you'll lose some of what demands attention in the end. Because when you finish a chair, if I can put into the chair what I feel, then it'll command attention. And that's important, you know, when you feel like, another way of saying that is, if it doesn't jump off the wall at you, it just hangs there on the wall, you've done nothing. But if it just commands your attention, where you just want to rest your eyes, that's the gold. And really, when I said that, I just reminded myself of what, of how I felt. To be able to rest my eyes and go all over the chair with my eyes and never hit an interruption. That's the idea. It's like water that flows. And if I can achieve that, I felt like, you know, that's what the desire is to be close to it and be, it's what makes me a part of it. Then I felt like, then I really feel the desire to reach that point gives me relief. Because what I think about this, this is as close as a man can get to knowing what it is for a woman to have a child. This is as close as a man can get. Because I'll tell you, I go through it. I go through it. I'm angry. I get very angry. I get depressed. I'm under tremendous strain at times through the whole thing. And I really wonder sometimes why I'm doing it. I really do. And then I'll find this piece that matches. Oh, and I'll feel so good. I know I did it. All over again, my energy starts all over again, brand new. I'll get so depressed, I'll come back. This is the truth. I'll walk and I'll walk and I'll walk and I'll come back. And I get so tired, I'll crash out. I'll get back up, I'll be down. And it's not like I don't think I won't find it. Because I know I eventually will, but I'll tell you that there's a place in there where determination and not giving up really plays a role. It does. And then there's just determination to finish what I start. Yeah, I'm glad I have that in me. It must be some cosmic order to finish it if I start it. Even if I'm not really particularly proud of it or like it so much that you know, like this chair, I don't want to, you know, diminish the chair, but still it's I still have to finish it. And we'll keep chairs, and because I have to finish them eventually, that keeps me going. But what the moments are, the high moments are, is when I come in with that piece that carries me on to the next piece I need. There's what making this kind of furniture is about, because you can really run up against a design. Now, see, I got led into this design, and either one of these chairs here, this sassafras chair, is the same way. It kind of, in a way, is I have less choice. It's almost harder to do. And I got really depressed over that chair right there, because I got into want it to be my way. And then I give in to what there was, and Kathy keeps me going by saying, because I'll get depressed, because if I try to force my will on it, which you can't help to do, you just gotta want it your way. We all want things our way. And I'll get depressed, and you know, it takes me 6 months at the best, at the top end, to make a chair when it's in there an original design. And finally, I'll go back out again and I'll find that other arm. Ah, then I'll feel real good when I come in and get it together. And Kathy took that chair, for her own. We took it over to the show, to Twisted Laurel exhibit. But I guess we would have sold it, but we didn't. And now I can't take it out no more, because she's afraid I will. But each chair is the same. I go through the same pattern. Unless, of course, it's a classical design. These pieces are laying around here now. I can make two or three of these. But I'm not moved at all to do that. No, I have no desire whatsoever. Now that I've made as many as I have, which are far more than you're looking at, I just have no desire whatsoever. I would do it, I guess, if I was commissioned to do it. Really, what moves me and gets me up, and even once I reach my design, and I know then where the chair is going, like this chair, for instance, I'll have a lull point, because now I'm going back and doing something. I already know what's going to happen, and I already know it's there, but I have to finish it and get it done, get it out there. But that's kind of a drag. It's monotonous, right? And then the cleaning is, is really, you know, that's you do this stuff in the wintertime. You sit around and you clean these pieces in the wintertime because, you know, it's cold outside and you can find patience and tolerance to do it, which is what it takes. Because it is the most monotonous thing of, if there is any monotony, it is cleaning the wood and getting it to fit the idea of what the chair is going to be in the finish. And so where should we go now?
Lane, would you have any thoughts at all about any other influences in terms of people?
Well, let me run that through my brain and see. When I go to galleries, you know, and look, lots of things, well, the energy in the piece that the person has done renews my energy to do what I'm doing. I feed off of that. That's the most I could probably say about that. Other designs in furniture, I can't off the top of my head say that it's more of the energy. It doesn't make any difference what the other artist did. If it's a piece of work, it makes me want to go home and go to work. Yeah, that energy. Yeah, that's where I, from somebody else, what I would get.
Have you ever encountered any rhododendron furniture before?
I saw a piece in a magazine.
I saw a piece of rhododendron.
Okay. I actually, Kathy found a piece of rhododendron in a magazine, and that really got me going. I was making rhododendron furniture at the time, and the piece, it was a bed. It was a rhododendron bed, and which was at the time I was making, I was beginning to work with rhododendron. That was quite a challenge, and I ended up, actually, I'm glad you said that, I ended up making that canopy bed. I'd like to show you a picture of that. Yeah, we've got a picture of that. I made a rhododendron canopy bed because of that picture. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know his name. You remember that guy's name? And that was back, my goodness, that goes back in the late 70s, wasn't it, early 80s or something? Late 70s. Mm-hmm. And other pieces of work, other furniture. Trying to think now who's inspired me as far as furniture goes.
Anybody in your family make furniture?
The rest of them, they like carving. All these faces you see around here, that's what...
Did your brother was carving wood before you were making furniture?
No, it kind of in reverse. He's my younger brother.
Ah.
And so it went in reverse of that. Actually, we were inspired to his whole family and to become involved in the arts and crafts business and a challenge of doing that. And they especially my brother's oldest son, he is a naturally talented person with carving faces and wood. And Mary hasn't seen those panels back there with the flowers on them, has she? Uh-huh.
Would you make a clear statement about the brother's wood carving? I'm not sure we got that right.
Yeah, say that again.
I just need a clear statement about all the faces you see around here were carved by my brother.
Okay.
You said it, I'm just not sure.
Okay. Any of the carvings that you see of faces out of these logs and everything was done by my brother and his oldest boy. They got a lot of attention from that. I don't believe they ever jumped in an exhibition or anything with it. But they're all self-taught, you see, and I think they're a bit shy about trying it. But
Yeah. Every bit of this you see is my brother's work and his family. And they also made furniture. They made chairs and beds and things. And they lived over in Lewis County. They had access to a different wood than over here. Let me think now.
You're a self-taught artist and you're not shy.
Hmm?
You're a self-taught artist and you're not shy about showing your stuff.
No. I you know what? I like being juried and judged. I like to know what, I know what I think of it. But I like to know what other people think of it, because in that way I can, that challenges me. And of course, especially if if you're able to win some awards, you really feel good about it, and then you really can go on even stronger, knowing that it really is a necessity for me to have that, to have that, that other person appreciate what I do. That's really probably more important than myself appreciating what I do. For me, the enjoyment I get out of it is the, like I said earlier, is the challenge to do that new piece that I've never seen. And then once I finally get to that point, then I really enjoy what other people think about it. It's really important to me. And any artist, I'd say, would be fair to say that to please other people is really important. Yeah, and it makes me feel real good when I do. And for a lot of people, I noticed, or it seems like on the surface, they don't care for that. I mean, I don't know, but I really do. And we were looking for an exhibition to try to put that chair in. And my problem is meeting a deadline. I've went through a couple already. Could have jumped in the biannual again, but I'm too late. Then we found one up in Martinsburg up here that we was going to try to make, but as of right now, I think we're too late. In the middle of May, I had to have my photos in. But I can't let a deadline. I can't allow a deadline in my life. I've done that, and it ain't no good. Mm-mm. I have to just let it go by and wait till the next time. I'm promoting my work. I don't do that. I don't know how to do that. I don't like doing that. It's just out of my understanding. But to keep working is how I feel. I feel if I just keep working, the rest of it, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't think like that, but I just feel like the rest of it will take care of itself. Yeah, I just can't go out. Then see, I feel like I'm trying to sell myself. And I start feeling a strange feeling that I don't like. Yeah. So I just come back home. Yeah, and then the galleries kind of let me down on the galleries. I take furniture to gallery, and here comes the person who runs and owns the gallery in a Mercedes Benz, and I get there in this old clunker, and I go, wait a minute, no, man. Something's wrong here. At 60%.
Could you talk a little bit about your lifestyle and how it affects your work? I mean, you live in a remote part of the world. You don't have electricity? Do you have electricity?
No electricity, no indoor plumbing.
Could you talk a little bit about how your lifestyle influences what you make?
It basically is the root of every bit of it. My lifestyle is at the root. It is the basis to everything I do and the reason why I do it. And that is to be a part of it, live with it, and have to have it. Because the old saying, the mother of invention is necessity. And to work from off of those premises is I feel real comfortable there. And I'm doing something that's useful. In a sense, it's a contribution. It's nothing more than to our lifestyle here to sustain it. And the reason there's a challenge to this, if I don't get political now on you. To living, we do this on purpose. This is how we want it, because this is the original Appalachian lifestyle. Now I'll explain that. The Appalachian person had this heavy desire to be completely free, to do whatever he wanted to do every day. And that changes. That's never the same. And to get up and go do it when I want to do it, and have absolutely no deadline other than living life and being and sustaining our lives ourselves. The only way I'm to know how to do that, because I don't have any education at all, is to do it like this. And it gives me the freedom to do what I want to do, when I want to do it. And there's an important thing for that. When the urge, if for lack of a better word, comes to work on furniture, it comes and it goes, and I don't have control over that. It'll go away and stay away. It's almost schizophrenic, but it isn't really. It'll go away and come back to me. And if I'm not living in a certain lifestyle, I probably wouldn't do it. I probably wouldn't do it because of the need to do it when it comes on me to do. Now I force myself. I force myself a lot. I get up and I go to work on the furniture, and because of a time schedule that inevitably works itself around, and I'll try to apply myself. But like I was just pointing out, we'll fix up for an exhibition, and I'm sorry that if I can't get to it from the deadline. But if I try to force it, I did that one time, and it messed up. And I sent a chair down to the exhibition in Charleston, got rejected, and it was of the quality to you know what chair I'm talking about too, don't you? The his and her chair. Uh-huh. Actually, it was more precisely a matrimonial chair. One chair faces forward. It's a six-legged chair, and one faces this way. You ever seen a chair like that? And speaking of pieces that start the whole thing going, because I had a piece that did this. I got one piece that went on top and went here. Then I put an arm here, an arm here, an arm here, and let's see, what were we talking about now?
You were saying that you tried to rush it for a deadline.
Oh yeah, that's right, that was the point. And then it wasn't complete. You could think it was. Maybe a person off the street, but buddy, you send it down to Charleston and they know better. Right? And we sent it anyway. The deadline was here, and we took it and went anyway. And it got rejected, and it came back. Later, Jerry ended up with the chair at Twisted Laurel exhibition, and I had finished it by then.
After the gunman and Rachel was in it.
Yeah, I did. I got a picture of Rachel and Gaston in it, kissing. When I took it, they invited me to the governor's mansion to show my... Remember when Rachel was and Gaston were there? That was what years were this? 80? 90, 90, 91? No, wait a minute. Oh, 93, 94?
Twisted Laurel was
97, 98?
It was right before I moved to town.
Uh-huh. We're probably pretty close. So we're back to 96 when we went to Governor's Mansion to show our stuff. And got Rachel and Gaston. But I sent it down there.
By then it was finished.
Yeah, by then, of course, I got it finished, and we went down there. And then Jerry sold it for me. And that was nice. It went to California. That was that girl that walked off without packing it or anything, didn't she? Remember that? Yeah. I felt really uncomfortable about that. I wanted to see the thing through, you know, but You ended up doing that for me, didn't you? Finding a packer and everything. And I'd find us a professional packer. So she did, didn't she? But let's see, where should we go now? We were talking about...
I think that's pretty good, unless there's anything else you think you need to say.
Well, I did like the idea about the Appalachian lifestyle and being challenged by it, and living on 25 acres and literally living on the 25 acres. And that is the Appalachian lifestyle. I mean, the original roots of it is we came out here and we lived off our land. That's what West Virginia basically is. And we still are today, you know. We live off our land here in West Virginia. We all participate in it. And we have kept it in an earthy way right there. And I'm not against selling timber. I really handpick it when we sell it. But it's part of what living on 25 acres and that Appalachian lifestyle. And if you'll go around, you'll see the baskets we weave. And you've noticed our grapevine baskets and up in the window. Get that window down and show it to Laura, would you? I mean, to Mary. It was a thing that we that's my design, by the way, I'm proud to say. And I created that design. I thought it up myself. And that came from your territory. This is wild grapevine that came from the Chesapeake Bay, pretty close to Baltimore. And I've got this in honeysuckle. If you go get some while we're got this photo up. And this basket's 15 years old, I bet, or more. And then we've got some recent stuff, Kathy, that we just made in Alabama. Now, this is another thing that moves me in the same way that the chair does. Glad we brought that up. It's grapevine was really popular. If you go back to the early 80s and the mid 80s, it got real popular. Grapevine wreaths started all off. And this started as a grapevine wreath, just trying to pick up a few bucks. And then, this is, by the way, could be considered one vine. And that is continuous motion, this one vine. Now, this one is honeysuckle from Alabama. And this, the same motion, that's one vine. And it flows. And that's a fruit basket that's basically made to hang and hold fruit. And this is a wall hanger that we would take green moss, face it with green moss, put burlap here, face it with green moss and dried flowers that the girls would go, and wildflowers, and it'd be dried. Or they'd dry them and arrange it. And it's a wall hanger, we call that. But this is what living, this is really, I like to think that we are present day live off the land Appalachian people that live off the land, and this is what comes off the land, and then you invent in this way to literally live off the land, everything from the chair to the baskets.
And, we would put ferns in it.
Oh yeah, we'd take this one and line it with green moss and then put dirt in the middle and then take green Christmas ferns from out of the woods, and which is really a piece that commanded a lot of attention. And actually, we lived off of this for quite a number of years as I went on with the furniture and brought it around and started getting a lot of attention. And these are just a couple of the ideas that I feel like is the challenge to... I feel like that I can do that. That I can come out here and with my family and live off this land and sustain ourselves from the very land. And that means, of course, planting a garden, and that means the variety of things one does, you know, trying to do that. So this furniture really came from that need, that desire, that want to do that. And there's a lot of proving yourself in it, right? And being able to do what is necessary to do and be proud of it.
Because so much of Appalachia is looked at as poor. And we do not consider ourselves poor, not in the slightest. Actually, we consider ourselves very wealthy. Yeah, because we get to do what we want to do. And we sustain that ourselves. And if we want to go get on the boat and go down the Ohio River to the Gulf of Mexico, we get to do that. We keep this up, mind you. Like I said, we made these on the way and collected this wood on the way. And we did a show in Demopolis, Alabama. Yeah, we whipped it up. See, we can go out in the woods and right off a riverbank, and which is actually part of our lifestyle here because we want to be able to go out and come back, but I don't want to out of my element. I want to stay in my element when I go out and I come back. And that was part of the river trip, is to do that and stay in our, keep our lifestyle, keep our in our elements so we can do this and go up on the riverbank and get it off the riverbank. This thing is going out here in the woods, of course, and then putting it together and then setting it down in front of people and letting them judge it, if you will, you know, what it is they